Flashback Twin Cities on Club 1220 KLBB. I am Tom Osmond on a slick Saturday morning. A little warmer, a little slick outside. Found a nice wet spot to park the car today. James, how are you doing?
Hey, not too shabby. I'm glad you found a spot.
I did find a spot. You know, I thought we'd talk a little bit about this morning. Have you been to downtown Minneapolis in a while, James?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I went to, I think, the Shout House maybe a month and a half ago.
The Shout House, and that is in Block E, correct?
I do believe so.
One of the last remaining tenants of Block E.
I had a few people from KLBB out with me. My buddy's a bouncer over there, so like, hey, I've never been. Let's stop.
Now, you probably have carte blanche to walk through the whole Block E mall because there really is there's nothing there besides Kieran's and the Shout House. This is...
Well, I think they have a few things over there. Saw Reefer Madness, the musical, right over there.
Oh, is that at the... What theater was that at? I know they...
Oh, gosh. Was that the Trust?
Okay. But in the Block E complex, which is what I think would be called a dead mall today, there's... I was walking in there recently, and they had a sign that said where Cold Stone and where Applebee's and where another adult-themed restaurant was... that sold wings, all these directions of places to go, and I thought, well, there actually is the parking lot, Kieran's, and the Shout House.
That's about it.
I thought we'd just take a little historical look of Block E this morning on our first segment. And in 19... Look at some history on Wikipedia right now, which has been cited, by the way. In 1950, as the rest of downtown gentrified, especially as a part of the Gateway District east of Hennepin was demolished and replaced with modern structures and parking lots, Lower Hennepin Avenue, where Block E sits, became known as a place for drunks, crime, and prostitution. Block E was a center of squalor, one of the city's most seedy bars. This is according to Wikipedia. It's an opinion.
Man, I'm loving this description.
Was known for its whale of a drink. Unsavory establishments including bars, flop houses, theaters settled in Block E. The Hennepin face was anchored at each end by a Schindler's newsstand. The chain began at 6th Street in the corner in 1916 and later split into two companies, framing Block E as bookends on opposite corners. And the Schindler's just closed a few years ago, which is now called the Union Bar and Restaurant now. That building was empty for a long time. Other parts of Block E included the Rand Hotel, Brady's Pub, and McDonald's Townhouse. But by the 1980s, it was one of the choice places for punks and became a breeding ground for punk music. It was also known for its cheap rent, drawing establishments as the Rife Sports Gallery. Minneapolis police had a paddy wagon parked outside permanently between for the counterflow of bus lane and the northbound traffic lanes.
I gotta interject here. It says it was a breeding ground for punks.
A breeding ground for punks.
Awesome.
This was a little bit before my time, sure, where I was, hanging out downtown in Block E.
That is a professional description.
If you go to tcmedianow.com, there's tons of video because I think every year there's a crackdown in Block E. This is the year we're cracking down on the crime in Block E in the 70s, 80s until about 25 years ago this month, actually, when they started demolishing it. Let's take a listen. We're going to get the full news intro here. This is Channel 11. Which was known as WTCN, in June 1985, lead story, Crackdown on Block E.
Now, from the action center of the Twin Cities, News 11 with Paul Majors, Diana Pierce, Tom Ryther on sports, and meteorologist Paul Douglas.
Good evening, Tom. Tonight's News 11, a police crackdown on street people in Minneapolis, and our News 11 investigative unit is on hand to bring you the pictures.
Today's arrest capped an intensive sweep of homeless people in the downtown area.
Today, 12 people were arrested on Hennepin Avenue. Charges against them range from disorderly conduct to the sale of drugs. The sweep, which started Monday, is an attempt by police to reduce the growing number of vagrants and transients on downtown streets, which they say is leading to increased crime. Monday, 20 vagrants were hauled to jail from under the 5th Street Bridge, and yesterday, more were taken into custody. Kevin McDowell has that story.
This stretch of Glenwood Avenue in Minneapolis is the kind of street with its rundown, empty buildings and seedy look you want to say has seen better days, but even those probably weren't too good. Lately, it's become an area where vagrants congregate. In its two-day cleanup, police yesterday took 7 people into custody, some former members of the Hell's Angels with outstanding felony warrants.
is Jackie Lee Steinbach Jr.
Do you have a home?
Yes, I do.
Where?
In this backpack.
Where are you from?
Beaumont, Texas. B-A-U-M-O-N-T. Roll the camera.
What are you doing up here?
Roll the camera.
It is.
Traveling.
Get in that van or I'll throw you in head first.
Why are you arrested?
And I'm a nice guy. I'm out. What do you call me, guys, down right now?
What?
You call me what? No good son of a son of a gun.
Many of these transients will end up in the detoxification center.
I'm sober.
Want to go back to Texas?
Police say that they're facing a sort of catch-22 in all this, because the vagrants they take to the detox center are out, usually within 72 hours, and that means they're back out here on the street. But police say they'll continue the roundups, hoping that the vagrants get the message. The message simple: get out of town. In Minneapolis, Kevin McDowell, News 11.
This 2-day sweep. I've tried looking up some of the names in this this piece. You see, they want to come on and do the show, but I've not been able to find them yet.
Good luck.
So that you get a little flavor of Block E, and if you thought that report was fun, Channel 11, this particular newscast, decided to take it one step further. They brought the photographer to do a night scope, the night camera video. She's going down Block E undercover to really get a firsthand idea on what Block E is. So let's look at this is from Barb Hill. She was a photographer at Channel 11, and this is her going undercover, walking through Block E and finding some even more interesting characters that might be known as street people.
The correct crackdown on crime in Minneapolis that our investigative team has been covering. It's been underway all spring along Hennepin Avenue, and tonight we get a first-hand look at that. News 11 photographer Barb Hill has been covering the sweep and volunteered to take part while our cameras recorded what happened. What happened is not nice. Here's what she found along Hennepin Avenue.
Hello. As I walked down Hennepin Avenue, a lot of questions came to mind. What is it about this street and these people that make me feel so nervous? What?
I just want a coffee to live in.
Oh, I'm just going to go get a Coke.
Can I go with you?
No, thanks.
Please.
No, thanks. The answers were easy. On Hennepin Avenue, many men assume the worst about a woman.
Where did you buy those Levi's? I think I like them.
The county seat?
County seat.
Maybe I like you. What are you doing?
Waiting for a bus.
Want to go out?
What?
Want to go out and have a girlfriend.
What are you talking about?
Hey, well.
No, thanks.
So Barb ran into a few characters who wanted to enjoy her company.
Man, that's creepy. That is creepy.
Check out the video. It's on tcmedianow.com. If you search for Block E or if you search for WTCN, you'll find it. It's actually an hour-long video of other news that day, but they do Nightscope is what it's called, and it's at the time, this is the mid-80s, so the video, night video has not been specialized yet, but she's walking to Hennepin Avenue, the same spots that we were just talking about, and a lot of action going on there. A lot of people that had the day off of work, apparently, were down there and asking Barb what she's up to and following around. It's very very candid video. And since Block E was, you know, demolished 25 years ago, there's very little actual footage of Block E that exists. There is about 3 seconds of the Schubert Theater in Purple Rain that you can see, but it's besides some
That's
photographs.
That's about it.
There's some photographs. There's there's actually a couple of different Facebook fan pages. I want to play one more clip. This is actually off the website. And this is, again, Moby's, which was an infamous bar in downtown Minneapolis and Block E. And this is one of the many stories that I've run across on what to do with Moby's.
The bar Minneapolis police are called to more often than any other will likely be closing down for a month. The City Council License Committee today recommended a one-month suspension of Moby Dick's license. The suspension follows a raid at the bar in December in which nine people, including some bar employees, were arrested on drug charges. City officials expect Moby Dick's to be permanently closed in June when all the buildings on the block are torn down to make way for a parking lot. A nearby bar owner says customers often ask him if he expects the clientele from Moby Dick's to move to surrounding bars, but Steve Schussler says he's not worried.
The Loon Cafe, Cheers, Jose's, the Pacific Club, you've got beautiful restaurants in the neighborhood. I don't think any of them are going to allow those kind of people in them.
Now, the full council and the mayor must still approve the license suspension at Moby Dick's. Ruth?
And that was a similar story that had been played over and over again, what to do with Moby's, with the, and in fact, the video, and this that's a piece from KSVP in March of 88. The paddy wagon is sitting outside Moby's right there waiting. I think the guests walk in, and they walk right out into the paddy wagon to an evening of county jail.
You knew what you were expecting when you went in there.
I think they might, and that's at tcmedianow.com. This is Flashback Twin Cities. Let's take a break. We come back. I actually have a person who might have been in Moby's maybe once. His name is Brian Lambert. He writes the Daily Glean for Min Post and was the media critic of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. We'll be back with Brian Lambert on Clubville 20, KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities. I'm Tom Osmond on KLBB Club 1220, and with a live in-studio guest, the writer of the Daily Glean every day on MinPost.com, Brian Lambert.
How you doing, Tom?
Good morning. Welcome to...
That's twice a day, you know.
That's twice a day.
Twice a day on the Glean.
Morning and afternoon edition.
Yeah, well, I'm... a lot of work out of me.
It's the first thing I do, and it's the mid-morning treat to be able to see what's going on the Glean.
I had to laugh at the investigative crew that Channel 11 used to send.
Investigative crew. You take a camera.
Otherwise known as a camera crew.
You take a camera, a photographer. That's investigative. It was no I-team, was it? No, it was...
Just have her walk down the street and see what happens.
We're investigating.
Let's remember, this was the third-place newscast, which no one watched. You gotta do something. You gotta take...
That would have been what? That would have been Paul's, one of his first couple of years,
that
right?
That was about a second year. That was 1985. Yeah. That was when it was still called WTCN, Twin Cities Newspapers.
I think their ratings spiked in the early 90s or something like that.
Yeah, 1987 was the first year they were number one.
Is that what it was?
Number one, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, you know, you might have been to Moby's once or twice.
A couple times, yeah.
And it was now is this exaggeration? Is the news exaggerating of the seedy element of Moby's, or was it just a misunderstood neighborhood bar which just wanted to serve the needs of its community?
No, it was seedy.
That's every bar.
It was seedy. There was, you had all these street people. Steve Schussler, you're talking about the folks that are not going to be allowed into the good restaurants. Yeah, they were all over there at Moby's.
Well, you know, you and today Brian does a lot of interviews. He does interviews for Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine. You've done it for Minnesota Monthly. Mm-hmm. I'm going to interview you today, and we're going to learn more about you through this next 40 minutes here.
Could be dull or embarrassing, one or the other.
But you did a show on cable access mm-hmm. back in the mid '80s called The Facts, mm-hmm. and this was on for what? 4 or 5 years, The Facts?
Long run. It was on longer than Star Trek.
It was longer than Star Trek, yeah. And probably a more loyal fan base than Star Trek. It was,
none of our fans wore antennas on their heads, though. So
it was kind of a view of its day. You know, about four or five panelists of four or five discussing vital issues of the day. And I think one of the first videos. This is actually on tcmedianow.com, was the Mondale candidacy. It's over with. It's done. It's mm-hmm. he lost the primary to Gary Hart, and it's done. That was mm-hmm. one of the first topics of The Facts. But you did a...
That's the Walter Mondale that went on to get the
nomination. Right, exactly.
But we had him written off.
But you did this great piece, and it's one of the most popular videos on the Met website in Block E. You decided to break... You did the same thing that 11 did. You went down to Block E.
And I was... It was a one-man investigative crew, Tom.
One-man investigative crew. I want to just get a little bit of a glimpse of this through audio here, of Brian Lambert investigating Block E.
Think they ought to keep this block behind us or tear it down?
Tear it down.
Tear it down. Think just bad elements here?
Yeah, and get rid of the tramps.
Yeah. Where, do you live downtown?
No, I live in a high-rise. So I work for the Lowe's and Fishers.
So. Lowe's and Fishers. Oh, yeah, Leo. How you doing?
Yeah, I've been over 5 years.
5 years. You ever come down here at night alone?
I can take care of myself. I ain't worried.
Yeah?
They don't bother me.
All right. But as far as you're concerned, they ought to tear this place down.
Yeah, get rid of it.
Get rid of it. Okay. Yeah. Thank you much. Yeah. I just want to know if you think they ought to level this block. You know, they keep talking about tearing it down. No. What happened to your hair? What did you do that?
I just put dye in it.
I like that. They ought to keep this place, then, you think?
Uh-huh.
Just want to know if you think they ought to tear down Block E here or do something to save it.
Damn right.
Tear it down?
Tear it down.
Tear it down. Just bad element?
Right. Yeah.
What about the argument that it just goes someplace else?
Well, let someplace else worry about it.
Like Des Moines.
That's right.
You think they ought to level it? Is there anything worth saving here?
No, not really. Really? Nothing.
Doesn't matter to you if it goes or stays.
It don't, really.
Yeah. You live in town here? Or
North Minneapolis.
Yeah. The main thing is the crime, of course. They say it deters people from coming across from, downtown and all that.
No, that's not so. Yeah. It's not going to tear down buildings, not going to stop the crime.
Another survey for cable TV in St. Paul. This block here, do you think they ought to tear it down?
That's right. I think they should.
Yeah?
The whole thing.
Okay. But what about the color and the spice of life it adds to otherwise drab and dull Minneapolis?
I think it sucks.
All right. That's exactly the point. Thank you. I think they ought to tear this block down. They call it the blight for years. Is there anything worth saving here?
Yeah, Moby's.
Moby's, yeah. So what happens to Moby's if it goes? What happens to everyone's style of life?
I think they should keep Moby's. It's an interesting bar.
Build around it?
Yeah. And I'm a recovering alcoholic. I don't drink. I still like, think Moby's is worth saving.
Still go in there?
On occasion.
Yeah. Diet Pepsi?
Coke. Diet Coke.
So, as far as you're concerned, they can keep Moby's and level the rest?
Yeah.
All right.
Gotta have something interesting and strange around town.
Son? I'm 54 years of age. I've been in the British Isles. I'm a citizen of the United States of America. And I like John F. Kennedy and all the good things. I don't know, for Hampton Avenue, I used to go to movies down here when I was a young boy.
Go for theater?
Yeah, every one of them. Every one. My grandmother took me down for lunch every day and everything. And I love this country and this city and this street. It's Hennepin Avenue. You're going to tear Hennepin Avenue down?
Just this block.
Oh,
right behind
block.
Us. Moby Dicks and all that stuff.
If it don't hurt nobody, I'm a Christian man. I'm a preacher. Mm-hmm. I have my Bible right here.
All right. They've been trying to tear down this block.
As long as Wrecking Ball doesn't hurt anyone, it might be okay.
The recovering alcoholic is still stopping in the movies.
They just wanted some Coke, man. That's all.
Coca-Cola. And you can get that, too.
That was Coca-Cola. Diet Coca-Cola. Our guest
with a hard side of rum.
Well, our guest is Brian Lambert of MinnPost. And that, again, was... it's called Block E, Man the Street Interview.
What year was that again?
1986, according to the tape label.
Yeah.
It was 1986. Yeah. And it's some of the few moving images of Block E that still exist. And in that static shot, you see the traffic and shinders in and out of those brown bags. Mm.
They were all getting their Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal.
Forbes. Right.
Forbes.
Right,
exactly.
So talk a little bit about what's going on with the Glean. You're working on the Glean now, so you do two updates of the news. And what's the theme of it? It's kind of a headlines brief.
You know, a lot of the internet and news wise is basically cobbling stuff together that other people have produced. And this is remarkably popular for some reason. People might be familiar with the Huffington Post and things like that. That's what they live off of, is work that other people have done. So I have to that's kind of what I do. So I scan the news and pick out interesting items, and occasionally we'll make a comment about what I think is happening there. And MinnPost is something else. I mean, they're actually doing their own reporting.
Mm-hmm,
but
right.
I'm a little silo onto myself.
A lot of former Star Tribune and Pioneer Press columnists and reporters working at MinnPost. Mm-hmm. Eric Black, Doug Groh, and of course
David Brower.
David Brower, right? Yeah. And you started. You've been a working journalist for how many years now?
1977.
And that was it the Twin Cities Reader the first?
No, that was the Apple Valley Free Press.
Okay.
Which I'll have to check, but I don't believe is in business anymore. And if you'd known the owner, you'd understand why.
What was your beat? What were you writing on?
Everything.
Okay.
Everything was my beat. Sports, local government, police.
High school sports,
sure. Exactly. And there weren't a lot of perks, although they did pick up the tab for a trip to Churchill, Manitoba, when they captured the beluga whales.
Oh, of course.
That was the highlight of my couple years there with them.
And then from there you went to the Twin Cities Reader.
Yeah.
And let's talk a little bit about that. That was the forerunner of City Pages.
They were they coexisted. Actually, Sweet Potato was the name of the first one, which I believe became transformed itself into City Pages. But almost simultaneously, the Twin Cities Reader came around. And the two existed side by side, a very uneasy competition. We were regularly insulted by the City Pages as, you know, the snobs.
So what was the difference between the marketing of City Pages and the Reader?
Virtually none. Reader had a bit more of an entertainment bent,
mm-hmm.
and City Pages prided itself on a little more literary.
A very youthful reporting staff, I'm guessing. A lot of 20-some.
Who else would work for $175 bucks a week?
Not in 2013, probably many, actually.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
And you were right. You were writing on topics of anything, correct?
I mean, anything. Yeah. It was, it eventually evolved into mostly movies and stuff like that.
So media, okay. And
media.
Then one day you get a call from the Pioneer Press from Deborah
Howell,
and come on down to the Pioneer Press. We have a spot for you.
Yeah, well, there was a little bit more of a gauntlet to run than just come on in and have a chair. But her famous line was. Looking at my resume, said, "You've done a lot of different things, you know, milk truck driver." Yada,
oh, sure,
yada, yada.
Right. Yeah.
Says, "I like that," and because that was the first time I'd heard that. Really, you do? Yeah, okay.
Well,
you're hired.
I recall you mentioning in one of the columns. I think when she passed away, unfortunately, a couple of years ago, you said, "Do you like TV or do you watch TV?" And I think you could, "No, I don't."
No.
Because good. You're a TV critic.
Yeah.
No.
Well, she wanted somebody that they regarded television as competition.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the point in publicizing the competition?
Right.
On the other hand, if you could write about TV and with all of its warts, that had the effect of diminishing your competition.
Well, you're also not writing about the national, whatever, you know, big TV movie of the week's coming up or, you know, whatever, you know, TV series are out there.
Yeah.
You're writing about the local news people.
Yeah.
And that can get a little bit sensitive sometimes because member of the media, here you are being a critic of the media, and I know that
they did not exactly appreciate
you,
that.
Especially when it was local TV news.
I keep telling people there are every journalist in the Twin Cities is God's gift to the First Amendment,
mm-hmm.
and each of them, there's no higher authority on journalistic ethics, and so you had to deal with that story by story.
And do you recall so you wrote a lot of columns, and I read many of these columns. What was, you know, can you recall a column in the early days, you know, the first time you wrote about TV news that might have caused a little bit of you got a response back or you got a call back from one of the station managers or a program director and said, what are you thinking here? What are you doing?
Well, I do remember one of Channel 4, and actually at the time, this would be in the early 90s, I think, 4, in my opinion, was doing some of the more interesting work in town.
Mm-hmm.
They did have the I-Team up,
mm-hmm.
and this was before they were taken over by Lowe's and then CBS,
right.
And it was still local management. And but they got wound up in an investigative story, truly an investigative story. It wasn't just a reporter walking down the street. As we heard in your opening segment. And they clearly had this guy identified as a murderer, you know, without certain pertinent facts. And basically all hell was breaking loose legally. And, you know, I saw the piece and called over and said, what about the point where he's identified as being, I forget all the details now, but as being 40 miles away when this happened? And he got a little glossy and all that. And they assembled a story and then closed in. They had a dramatic closing shot where they panned in slowly on this guy's face kind of with a kind of a, you know, a wipe scene, you know, in movie terms.
Was there music too?
There was dramatic music, but it was of the graves and this guy's face. So he was making a big stink. But I wrote the piece, and oh my God, did we get the news director, the general manager? They're all calling into you know, the
managing editor,
of the Pioneer Press. Deb Howell was long gone. She was there 6 months after I started. So.
Did it turn out to be? Was everything true that they
settled out of court? Okay. No admission of guilt.
Okay,
that's how those things are handled.
I always find it amazing. My guess is Brian Lambert. February, May, and November. The sweeps months. Well, yeah. And I'm not sure if it's still in the new media era.
Is
it still February? Okay.
How
much more interesting, we'll call it interesting, can our station's sweeps investigation be? And sometimes you got to wonder, did someone come up with kind of a Hollywood script and they went in there and they thought of a five-part series for a sweeps month or a sweeps month week. Could be from Satanic Rituals, or it could be undercover housekeepers that you know might have been wearing
nothing at all.
Well, I was going to say swimming trunks, and it's a 5-part series. I love it. It's always a 5-part series, and they bring
tune in tomorrow night, bring
the reporter onto the set.
More pixelation tomorrow night.
This is the week where you'll see the reporter will actually come on the set. I mean, they'll come actually at 10 o'clock at night. They'll be on set to give that extra little you know clarity,
gravity
of what they just. We're speaking about.
Yeah.
Tell me, you got to have at least two or three good sweep memories that you wrote about.
Well, as you and I have talked, Tom, I mean, as far as I was concerned, the all-time classic was a Channel 5 piece about and you kind of alluded to it, about housekeepers. And of course, this was all hidden camera stuffed in a bag in the corner to watch what was going on.
I'm loving it already.
The call goes in. You hire this young lady to come over and clean your house. Well, you know, we are shocked to find out, A, that this young lady is dusting and vacuuming topless. Furthermore, as the series goes on, you know, the closing line is that we are astounded to realize that this young lady, this sweet young lady we see in this pixelated video, is a prostitute. She is engaging in, you know, sexual relations for money. Who would have thought? Who would have guessed? But the hype and everything that went on. But like you say, these story ideas circulate around the country.
Yeah.
Right, you know, if it worked in Fresno,
right,
there's no reason why it can't work in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Well, it's, you know, the same national consultants that work in New York and especially Los Angeles. You mentioned to me, we were talking a little bit, that you were in L.A. Mm. Tell me this story. You're in L.A., and L.A. is the
– Oh, just recently.
Yeah, just recently. Yeah. California. We have some of the greatest centers of technology and
– Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Right.
Huge, you know, laboratories.
Our friend Paul Majors, you heard some audio of him a little bit ago, and he is the news anchor at KCBS in L.A., and what was his first story that night?
Well, we had been to just make a tour around town, and oddly, coincidentally enough, we had driven, my wife hadn't been there in a while, we'd driven down Hollywood Boulevard and Grauman's Chinese Theater, people are familiar with that, and there was a premiere. They have premieres there every week. And this one was for a uniquely bad movie that was recently out called Movie 43, which on Rotten Tomatoes, the movie website, I think it got an 8%.
Who starred in that?
Everybody starred in it. Oh. I mean, they had like all these name actors who did like 5-minute bits, and the movie was just ridiculed. Anyway, there's a crowd. There's a mob lined up out front. We drive by. We go back to our hotel, watch the evening news. There's Paul. Hey, there's Paul, looking a little bit older these days, you know. So here we are. Here's in a metropolitan area of 13 million people, some of the biggest research labs, corporate government in the planet. I'm sure there's something interesting that's gone on in those labs. There's a mayor's race that's happening in L.A. The lead story is 3 minutes of celebrity interviews from Movie 43. That's doing news right, folks.
That's doing news right. That's which, by the way, no offense, Paul Majors, because I do want him to come on the show sometime.
Yes, fine journalist.
Oh, yeah, just to give you a quick idea for this movie 43, one of my favorite reviews of that, it's a cartoon where it pans in from the outside of a house, slowly going in through the window to a guy in the shower, curled up in the fetal position, just crying. Just weeping.
That's like, the review.
That's
of
the review.
This sounds.
I
like,
didn't see the movie.
An artistic film here. That
it was junk, but
not...
you know, the point is, every night they cover this red carpet stuff. Every night of the week, every afternoon of the week, there's a red carpet event in L.A. You could have a whole red carpet channel if you wanted.
I think you've written about this many times before. The news, the audience in Minneapolis, St. Paul is a different audience than in L.A. And the consultant. And the station managers that are these corporate ownerships that are owning these stations, with the exception of the Hubbard family, which is still locally owned.
One of the very rare in the country.
Very few. And they're looking at the ratings in L.A. like, why can't we emulate this here in Minneapolis? We'll be number one. Car chases, provocative stories on housekeeping. They've tried to emulate that here with, you know, sometimes the talent and sometimes with the story content. As a media critic, and you've been to a few different cities, you've been to the press junkets. What's different about the news audience in Minneapolis, St. Paul, than in other cities?
Well, there's still, I think, a bit more cultural resistance to trendiness and hype in the Twin Cities. But you know, they're appealing. I mean, it's the whole radio, as you guys know, it's a demographic chase. You just want your slice of the pie. Right. You find. The corner of the media world, the marketplace that you can appeal to, and that's usually pretty good. And you can do that. And if you're in Los Angeles and you need 800,000 viewers to make yourself the number one newscast every night, there's 800,000 people out there that are most interested in an interview with the D-list stars of Movie 43. And, you know, you will keep your profits up to a level that you can pay off the debt for the private equity company that took over your station.
Well, I guess that's when you look at Entertainment Tonight and the news sometimes in 2013, it can be blurred sometimes on what you're watching. I've always liked there's a station in town. I remember when Survivor was the big hot ticket for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And
I know where you're going here.
It was like every night there was a Survivor update on the evening news.
Yeah.
And it was a very odd co-branding. And I think that you're not co-branding with CBS News. You're co-branding with CBS Entertainment on local CBS
here in town. Because you're all owned by CBS.
Because you're
owned
by CBS.
Yeah.
You have a hat with a CBS logo on it as you're talking about it.
And the reason you're owned by CBS is CBS wanted a reliable local platform to promote their primetime news story programs.
Right. Well, and Brian Lambert, my guest today, you also did movie reviews on Channel 5 for a while.
I did.
And
I'm proud to say it.
Proud to say it. Well, you know, I have one of your better reviews here. Let's take a little – this is an audio clip. It's from 1988.
Recently, I learned that Ernest, who's played by Jim Varney, was created to hype a decrepit amusement park in southern Kentucky. And since that humble beginning, has gone on to infest local advertising markets in virtually every major city in North America. You may notice as you watch Ernest Saves Christmas that every possible label is turned toward the camera, which kind of keeps up Ernest's meathead reputation as a pitch man. But as someone who actually thought the Three Stooges were hurting themselves, I must confess, I actually laughed out loud watching this thing.
Oh, man.
I don't think it matters all that much that these laughs came in the first few minutes before I was worn down into a migraine slumber by the rampant stupidity on display. On the other hand, Ernest Saves Christmas has been polished somewhat by the Disney studios. And in the spirit of Santa and Disney, there are no bad words spoken nor any guns fondled. A very low IQ wholesomeness covers everything. It also goes without saying that the Three Stooges and Jerry Lewis, my boyhood heroes, enjoyed long careers. And I'm here to tell you, like it or not, this guy Ernest is on to something big here.
And what happened to Jim Varney?
Jim Varney, where is he today?
I think that might be the last one he did.
That is amazing. Low IQ wholesomeness. I'm going to have to remember that.
That's part of the main, the essence of the pitch.
That is the most review of Ernest movie I've ever heard in my life.
Thanks for bringing that one up, Tom.
This is flashback. We have to flash back.
Yeah,
we have to flash back to the way back machine. Let's take a break. This is Brian Lambert. He is my guest today. This is Tom Osmond on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with my guest Brian Lambert of MinPost.com and TheSameRowdyCrowd.com. What is The Same Rowdy Crowd?
That's a blog that features a number of myself and people who have been in the communications industry. John Austin, who pops up on TV often enough, does crisis management. Bruce Bennett used to work for the Star Tribune. Others.
Bill Sutter, I saw he wrote a blog. First time in about a year, I saw he wrote an entry.
We dogged him. We forced him to come out and write something.
And this is a blog you can read, and you can comment on it, too. And the crowd gets a little rowdy.
It's the internet. Here's a shocker. It's kind of an incivil place from time to time.
Well, and you don't have to go back too many years. And even in when I was in college and not long after that, the internet was not really a prevalent part of journalism. We're not talking 40 years ago.
We're talking
15 years ago. When you're working for the Reader, working for the Pioneer Press, did you ever foresee you're going to be in competition not only with the TV and the radio, but now with computers, and then not only computers, with digital handheld devices.
No, unimaginable.
And I'm guessing that the industry, the people that invested tons of money in these companies didn't foresee this happening either.
No, they were all well behind it. I mean, I was at the Pioneer Press when the internet sort of really picked up steam, and they were completely confused about what we were supposed to do here. The idea that Craigslist would come along and strip away, vast amounts of revenue from their classified advertising did not occur to them.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, did it occur to them that there was some way to firewall off some of this stuff and create, some minimal revenue stream.
Were they slow? I mean, I think they're slow to react. The two big papers in town, the internet was maturing. I wouldn't say it's mature. It was maturing, and they thought was this going to just going to be a fad, or it's going to be just the, it's going to be a different demographic we're not going to go after.
I think you're right about the second part. I think for too long they assumed it was just going to be the first adapter techies who would be following this, and their basic readership would continue to grasp on, take the dead tree edition. And the speed with which that changed flattened them, where you have 50, 60, 70-year-olds, reading their paper, taking their product for free off the internet. That didn't occur to them either.
Well, the challenge I have, and I have a newsreader, but now I have to read yesterday's news on a dead tree. It isn't.
And that was a part of the discussion in the time I left the Pioneer Press in 2005, and we probably had 3 years worth of discussions about how do you hang on to this once the panic had set in and you can see the trends where it was going. And I don't think there's anybody who believes that 20 years from now that there'll be a dead tree edition of these papers. It simply won't be necessary. I mean, all your smartphones and everything are so much better in terms of delivering that product. And, but you can't right now. There's no way to match the revenue you get from, the Target circulars and everything else that are stuffed into your newspaper editions.
Well, and speaking of that, and the big retailers, everything is now online now. I mean, you can get your circular online into a phone app, or you can actually get the coupons right in your phone. And people don't want to carry papers around. I remember when I got the first iPod, when the first couple of iPods that came out, and I thought, this is not going to be mainstream, or people are actually going to now sit and put all their music on a little device. This is going to be too complicated because, trying to explain.
You're looking at me, Tom, when you said that.
I'm looking right straight out at the. No, I'm. You know,
I saw
Tom,
it too.
Tom
I
has
saw
it too. Tom has helped me kind of get my iPod.
Well, I do what I can do. The technology adaptation, I think, is always challenging. But I think that companies like Apple have made technology so easy, and Samsung, other companies now are doing the same thing too. when MP3 players first came out, I mean, they were complicated to use. You had no screen, you had no right. visualization. And even if you think about it...
They were not intuitive.
And even the old AOL Prodigy days, I mean, it was a big deal. You had to go on the internet, you had to sign in for it, wait for the dial tone to come mm-hmm. on. But then when, you know, the cable companies got involved and then these other, you know, computer companies got involved...
2G, 3G, 4G.
Exactly. It's makes it so convenient. It's as convenient as picking up that City Pages in the bin when you're waiting for the bus mm-hmm. stop now.
And, you know, yesterday, one of my things for the last my fascinations for the last few years, based on people who said that they like holding a newspaper in their hands when they have their coffee in the morning, mm-hmm. and is the flexible computer paper, mm-hmm. which I saw an item just a couple days ago with yet another there was a company called Plastic Logic that had this flexible paper. You could roll it up in a scroll. It opens up, and it's essentially, you know, it's the internet right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the images change. You squeeze it. The images turn the page. All the big full-color advertising you want to sell and everything. And it still looks a little clunky. They got some kind of a USB cord stick out of the bottom. You know, they might how the battery. But it's coming. It's inevitable that they will deliver that.
What is the future for local media right now? It's maybe not a question to ask on a local radio show, but – so TV news, you know, local radio, AM, FM, we're in the era of, you know, 20 years ago, there might have been, you know, five local stations and maybe 50, you know, maybe 50 cable channels. Now we have about 200 cable channels. And if you have, you know, the right kind of satellite package, you might have 300 or 400 mm-hmm. channels. We now have, we can get any station from the world right now. We have, you know, Pandora, we have you know, right. any podcast. How are they going to... How are they going to survive? I mean, the demise of radio has been predicted many times since 1948 when TVs first were marketed. How are these industries going to survive?
Well, I think they, you know, the goal for radio, I think, is some kind of a local marketing. You can't get that out of the satellite. You can't, you know, you can dial into Moscow radio if you want. But, you know, if you want to find out what's going on in the St. Croix Valley, you're still going to need local radio stations.
Mm-hmm.
Question is how many people really want to do that. And then, of course, there's the overhead of the building and everything,
right.
which is probably a major expense that they're going to have to figure out some way to avoid and deliver, do it much more portably and cheaper. But, you know, it's an ad revenue game again. And, but you know, that ad revenue, I don't know that that increases exactly as time goes by, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's scaling back some part of it that that technology allows you to produce more effectively with far less weight. You know, the thing, frankly, that, you know, you guys out here have got kind of a niche with the, you know, the Music of Your Lives thing. But I am constantly amazed that the iPod generation is still tuning in to commercial, you know, broadcast radio. I don't understand that. I mean, one guy, in a pro in the business, was talking about, you know, it was interesting that it was country, he used as an example, was that country music audience is kind of the last adapters,
mm-hmm.
which explains part of its still continuing audience strength.
And that's still the biggest format in the country, correct? I think it's still country.
I believe half of all radio stations are country.
Yeah. And they were the last to adapt to, you know, become, you know, you know, adept with iPods and stuff, programming the music they want. You know, something like NPR's The Current is kind of living off new music, stuff that mm-hmm. people probably may not yet have on their iPod and want to
right.
be introduced to.
Well, it's interesting because when you bought an album or a cassette or a CD, it's oftentimes
like my Herb Alpert collection,
like your Herb Alpert collection.
right.
Your I was thinking more of your heart collection or your ELL collection, which you finally have spoken of in the blog. You still have to listen to something somewhere
right.
to buy it.
Yeah, you need to be introduced to it somewhere.
Where's that circle going to come? Because I do believe there's a lot of people that there are a lot of people, I think, in we'll call my generation, that are not listening to commercial radio. They do in the car. They do in the car when they're going to work, going home from work, going somewhere, because to hook up the iPod or iPhone or whatever to the car audio, there's some steps there. And Oftentimes people are running late. They don't do that.
They're listening to the commercial music stations?
They are in the car. I think that is this place they're listening to. I don't know if people are listening to it at home like they were. I think when you're home, I think you have the sound dock, and I think that you're
Back in when the dinosaurs roamed the earth when I was a kid, I mean, of course, we did listen at home to Alan Stone, and if we could pick him up, and people like you've had on the show. Clyde Clifford from Little Rock, Arkansas. Bleecker Street Theater would come on. It was very trippy, very heavy.
My guest is Brian Lambert of MinPost. And MinPost, this is it's an interesting experiment that it's a business that Joel Kramer has created, and with a lot of former publisher of the Star Tribune, a lot of former editor.
Did both jobs at some point.
A lot of former columnists, and it's free. You can listen. You can read this content for free. You can. This is the future of news, correct?
It's one of the futures of news. There aren't many of these in the country. There's a thing called the Texas Tribune out of Austin that is doing essentially the same thing. There's another smaller one in San Diego. But it's nonprofit news. It's essentially like NPR. We encourage memberships. It isn't required, but we encourage it. And there's an awful lot of fundraising that goes on. Obviously, the costs are down in terms of what they pay people. But it's a legitimate model. That's what Joel's trying to differentiate from a lot of what goes on the internet, where it's just a lot of gas bagging and people throwing opinions and insults at each other. I mean, there is actual reporting that happens at MinPost, and people who are familiar with Gawker and some of the more popular websites, it's a different tone than that. It's aimed at a different audience, but I think, it's 5 years now in existence at MinPost, and it still seems to be – it's got its own sustaining momentum. So.
And one thing I find interesting about MinPost, the Rowdy Crowd, and new media now is the commentary you can do. I mean, people now have found a way to interact with
– I kind of like that. I think it's interesting.
Well, mostly. And I think that I've talked to a lot of different news – journalists over the last couple of years and doing the show here, and letters. You used to get letters in the mail and complaining about.
I got a collection of some of the best.
We got to come back and read some of them sometime.
Some very bad spelling.
In capital letters and
it was caps locking before there was the internet.
And how many four letter words are in those letters?
Quite a few.
Not allowed to print. Yeah. You remember when you first got email? How many emails were you getting on your columns when the email first?
At Pie Press.
Mm-hmm.
Well, almost none. Nobody knew how to use it. It didn't have the email address. It wasn't attached to every story.
And with the MinPost, not only do you people can comment on these stories and comment among each other. But also the columnist will reply back. So when you dispute some fact or you dispute some opinion that might have been made, now the columnist can come back and say, well, wait a second, check this link out, and I've cited my source.
The MinPost moderates, so you cannot get offensive and be quite as colorful, shall we say, as elsewhere. The idea. But I like this because there are smart people out there. Most journalists think they are the smartest, and their real claim is that they simply got to the story first and know a little bit more about it than 80% of their readership. But there's a 20% out there that probably knows more than they do about the given topic, and it's interesting to invite them into a conversation.
I've found that any topic that you think you're an expert at, there's someone that knows it even better, even more than you.
Bet on it.
TCmedia.com is all local news, it's all about local media. But on the Facebook page on TC Media now, if I put a link up, I'm corrected typically, and I have about five comments on how wrong I was on the point that I was trying to get
and
up
thank
there.
Thank you for that, sir.
Because there's what do you like?
Just didn't articulate. That's all.
No matter what you like, there's someone who knows about it way more now. Yeah. Maybe even scarier than you think. You might think your expertise is scary.
Yeah.
There's people out there that might even frighten you more.
Yeah, who are, of course, they're moving into a level of obsession that you probably don't want to get to.
I'm guessing there might be one or two people out there that are reading MinPost or you pick your blog, and they're waiting for someone to reply back to them because they already have the next comment in their mind they're going to spout out and they're going to hit submit.
You got somebody in mind you're thinking about?
Not at all. Brian Lambert's my guest. Read MinPost, minpost.com. He writes the Daily Glean. This has been Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Osmond. We will be back next week with another show. Listen at noon today. I'll be on with Stan Turner on The Stan Turner Show talking about Dayton's.